Hello, podcasters. Today is a today's a great show. We are putting a special together next week on Joe Biden. And while everybody's talking about how handsy he is, I want to talk about how handsy his son is. In a story that almost no one knows, we are talking to the experts, and we're going to put it all together for you next week. I believe it's a week from today, week from Thursday, that you will hear all of the evidence against Joe Biden and his son. There's some pretty stunning stuff. We had Peter Schweizer on about it, and John Solomon, a guy who reported for the Associated Press and the Washington Post for over 20 years. Now saying, no, he's an opinion guy. No, he's not.
Well, he's pointing out things that are not based on opinion, that's for sure.
Yeah.
He's pointing out facts. And by the way, we're going to go through all this, as you pointed out, next week on the TV show. This is a great time to join up with Blaze TV. You're not only going to get Glenn's analysis and these big exposés that are coming out on all these candidates every single week, we're doing a new one. You're also going to get, you know, analysis from Mark Levin and Steven Crowder and Eric Bolling and a whole, you know, great slew of people who can break down every issue from every angle. So go to blazetv.com/Glenn. Use the promo code Glenn and save $10.
And we really need your help. We desperately need your help to be able to do the connecting of the dots and tying it all together for you. We need your support at blazetv.com. .com/Glenn, promo code Glenn. Make sure you put the promo code Glenn in. Please do that today. Also, it's Helium Thursday. We found something that we fit helium perfectly. Louis Farrakhan. And who's the biggest fraud candidate? All this and more on today's podcast.
You're listening to the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Okay, so while everybody is concentrating on Joe Biden, and he's, well, would you call it an apology, Stu?
I mean, no, I wouldn't say it was an apology. I mean, first of all, he didn't say you're sorry, not required in an apology, by the way. But, you know, it's an expression of regret, so I think you could get there's some level of apology in there. However, it's more of, you know, look, you guys changed the rules, and I now realize you've changed the rules, and I will change to reflect that. We actually have
what
this statement.
Rules? Wait, what rules?
The rules of human interaction, I guess.
No, the rules have never been like that. I mean, unless you're John Wayne Gacy. I mean, really, seriously, what are the rules? That's like, those are like, I think that guy's a pedophile. In 1965 to 2025, that's pretty clear.
Well, I mean, I don't know if that's actually true. I will say that, you know, there's been a lot of study on who is offended by such things, such creepy Joe Biden actions over the past couple of weeks. And it seems to me to be largely some sort of generational gap in which everyone who seems to be interviewed, who's a Democrat and has, you know, campaigned with Joe Biden or been at rallies with him, the older generation seems to really like it. And, you know, like there's people, one of the women who came out, now there's seven, by the way, who've come out and said, hey, Joe Biden made me feel uncomfortable. One of the women specifically said after it happened, everyone started coming up to me and saying, oh, you're so lucky. And I thought to myself, wow, should I think of myself as lucky and not offended? Which I don't even I don't even understand the thought process that goes into that. I mean, if you felt creeped out about it, why are you second guessing and thinking you might be lucky? I don't understand it. But the point there is that everyone around her did not seem like it was offended to the fact that she's got a bunch of attention from the vice president of the United States. People were thinking it was kind of great. And the funny thing about this is, and I think it's very central to this whole incident, the first thing you have to remember is absolutely no one on the Democratic side actually cares about any of this.
Nope.
Not one little bit.
Nope.
None of them think it's bad. None of them care, including, I would say, the women who actually are coming forward. Now, yes, they may have been offended, but watch how little they care about those incidents if he wins the nomination. They'll all be out there being like, you know what? I mean, it did make me feel upset at the time, but I think he's changed. And I honestly, he's a really good guy. I've learned over the past few months about what a great guy this guy is, and I support him, and that's why I'm campaigning for him as
for
president.
The timing of this coming out is just ridiculous.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
It's ridiculous. This has been an issue for a very long time. We've talked about it, you know, before. This is solely an issue being used for politics because at this very moment, they think they can get someone who's more socialist than him to be president. If they believe the two choices are Joe Biden and Donald Trump, the most socialist person they're going to be able to find is Joe Biden, and then they will love him. And they will only be critical of whatever they think Donald Trump did.
And they will hammer anyone who comes out against him.
Of course. I mean, it's so transparent, mm-hmm. so it's hard to take any of this seriously. Here's the sort of underlying issue here for Biden when it comes to the story. Mm-hmm. Joe Biden's strength as a campaigner is very closely related to what we're calling creepy, which is he comes out, he shakes everybody's hands, he gives everybody hugs. He doesn't put his hands on the shoulder of everybody. He doesn't kiss everybody's head.
Right,
but
he doesn't do it if it's a man or a boy.
Well, he says he does do it sometimes with a man. He says that in a statement.
He's come up to a man and smelled the back of his head.
He does allude to that. He doesn't specifically say it. I've never seen that before. It's possible, though.
I'd like to see the video footage of that.
If you're Joe Biden and your strength is walking around some Iowa firehouse and shaking hands and kissing babies, which is what everyone used to call it. I don't mm-hmm. think you can call it that anymore. Mm-hmm. If he can no longer do that, because if he has one moment that looks creepy, it's going to be a national news story every time now. Mm-hmm. So you've taken his strength away from him for this entire primary, which, of course, is the secondary part of this. Number one is get him out of the race. Hopefully this turns into a big thing so we can win because we're socialists. Number two is if he's going to be in the race, at least the things that give him an advantage over us, we're going to be able to take away.
I feel somewhat like, remember that scene with the emperor where Luke has all this, you know, gusto, like, oh yeah, my friends are coming, and the emperor just goes, oh, you think that your friends will save you? it's kind of like that. It's kind of like, oh, at least we got Biden. Oh, you think that Biden will save you?
He will not. He's gonna try, though. And Jolton Joe had a statement that came out yesterday. And this is it was made on a phone, so the audio is not fantastic. But let's listen to it and we can translate if needed.
In my career, I've always tried to make a human connection. That's my responsibility, I think. I shake hands, I hug people, I grab men and women by the shoulders and say, you can do this. And whether they're women, men, young, old, it's the way I've always been. It's the way I've tried to show I care about them and I'm listening. And over the years, knowing what I've been through, the things that I've faced, I've found that scores, if not hundreds of people have come up to me and reached out for solace and comfort, something, anything that may help them get through the tragedy they're going through. And so it's just who I am. Social norms have begun to change. They've shifted. And the boundaries of protecting personal space have been reset. And I get it. I get it. I hear what they're saying. I understand it. And I'll be much more mindful. That's my responsibility. My responsibility, and I'll meet it. But I always believe governing, quite frankly, life for that matter, is about connecting with people. I've worked my whole life to empower women. I've worked my whole life to prevent abuse. I've written, and so the idea that I can't adjust to the fact that personal space is important, more important than it's ever been, is just not thinkable. I will.
Where's his good wife Jill on this? His beautiful, lovely, talented good wife Jill. I mean, that would help a lot. And because he always talks about Jill. And quite honestly, if I were doing these videos, you know, and I had been hugging people and you saw these kids like, oh, this is creepy, my wife would say to me, would you stop doing that? Oh, honey, I just love it. I just love these kids. I know, but it looks creepy. Stop it. Stop it. I know. You got love in your heart and everything else, but stop it.
Yeah.
She's never said that to him. And where is she just going, you know, not just stepping up and just going, you know what? My husband is like this. I've talked to him about it before. He's just like this. But he is a loving guy. You know how much ground he could gain? He could shut it down. Where is his good wife, Jill? Maybe he doesn't ever want to include her in this because, you know, whatever. But it just seems strange. Because I know my wife, your wife would too. Lisa would too.
Mm-hmm.
If you were seen in these videos, because you watch these videos and a lot of them are very uncomfortable. And you watch them. And if you knew, I mean, Lisa knows you. You're not a creepy predator. But if you were acting.
I try not to be. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. If you were acting like a creepy predator, if you were acting like Joe does.
Yes.
She would see that. And what would she say?
Hey, I mean, she'd probably be delicate about it, but try to tell me. Stop doing that immediately.
Yeah, that's really, that's not, it doesn't, it's,
yeah, it's a
people
little
are
weird
creeping out, it's weird. Stop it. It's
I know
weird.
You don't mean anything by it, but, you know, be careful with people's personal space, right? I mean, that's, and that, now look, that may have happened. We don't know. It may have happened multiple times.
But that's what
times.
She could say. Look, I've said this to Joe. He's not like that. He's not like that. He doesn't even see it that way. He really believes in connecting with people, but I see it. I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying. I see it, but I know my husband as well.
I mean, it could very well be. Remember, they're not even in the campaign yet. You know, I mean, it could very well be that they're holding that back as a future defense.
The best of the Glenn Beck program. Like listening to this podcast? If you're not a subscriber, become one now on iTunes. And while you're there, do us a favor and rate the show.
I don't know if you saw this. Pat Gray joins us. Minister Louis Farrakhan, who his Twitter is still up after this, he said yesterday, God does not love this world. Now, that's news to me.
Hmm.
God never sent Jesus to die for this world. Jesus died because he was 2,000 years too soon to bring about the end of civilization of the Jews.
Wow.
He was never on no cross. There was no Calvary for that Jesus. Imagine.
Huh.
He's offended. He's offended everybody except the people who follow him here. Here's the audio.
God does not love this world. God never sent Jesus to die for this world. Jesus died because he was 2,000 years too soon to bring about the end of the civilization of the Jews.
Stop for a second.
Wait,
this is,
what?
This is, that's incredible.
Wow. Don't even.
Oh my gosh, wait a minute.
What?
It's Helium Thursday.
That's true.
Why are we doing this? Sarah.
Yes.
Can you make Louis Farrakhan sound like he's on helium?
I think I can do that.
Okay. Here I am.
Wait, hold on. Hold on.
Okay.
That's okay. Ladies and gentlemen, the Glenn Beck program presents Helium Thursdays with today's special guest, Louis Farrakhan.
God does not love this world. God never sent Jesus to die for this world.
Oh, man.
Jesus died because he was 2,000 years too soon to bring about the end of the civilization of the Jews.
Makes it a little more palatable, doesn't it?
It does. It really
it
does
help.
It
helps. Wait a minute. Who else could we do this to? Play the...
There was no Calvary for that.
Stop. Play the Joe Biden apology thing from yesterday.
Okay.
In my career, I've always tried to make a human connection. That's my responsibility, I think. I shake hands, I hug people.
No, not as good.
Doesn't work.
Yeah,
doesn't work. Yeah.
What other audio do we have from this week?
let's see. Is there anything in here?
Anything
that
else is...
Clear? Alyssa Milano's too. You can't really hear the Alyssa
Milano is there,
one too well.
Is there... What was from... let's see. How about the green real deal,
yeah,
is that? No.
How about the Julian Castro? He's talking about the border crisis is BS. Here,
okay,
let's see
ahead.
What he sounds
Try
like
that.
On helium.
The feeling from this administration is that we are in a full-blown crisis and that they are overwhelmed by it. How do you think about that?
You know, I don't believe their narrative. I don't believe the BS that women and children who are fleeing dangerous circumstances mm-hmm. present a national security threat to this country.
We should put all of Congress on helium. And then you could just, it doesn't matter what they say.
It doesn't matter.
The approval rating would definitely go up from, what is it, like 14%?
Hey, how about the 5 days away from fundamental transformation? Can you get that for me?
The Barack Obama clip from 2008?
It wouldn't have been so scary if he would have sounded like he was on helium. Do you have it, Sarah? We played it yesterday, and you find even the Barack knows. Barack knows what we're going to have to do is change
our traditions.
We are 5 days away from fundamentally transforming the United States of America.
I mean, really, it's just Louis Farrakhan. I don't know. I think we should just be playing Louis Farrakhan. Yeah. I don't know that any of these other ones work. It should just be Louis Farrakhan Helium Thursday.
How about the View hosts?
From yesterday?
Give me something from The View. It might be just Louis Farrakhan.
Joe is a hands-on kind of guy. Yeah, but no one, I've never heard anyone, and she says she felt violated, and I have to take her at her word, but it would have been good. Nice if she had turned to him and said, you know what, Jay? I don't really like this. Please don't do this, or not, Mr. Vice President, I'm not really comfortable with that. Something, because he's standing right there. I don't think it rises to the point what we've been listening to about everyone and the rest of these people. It just doesn't look like that.
When you're looking at Joy Behar and you're hearing that voice, it's pretty good.
It's a much better voice.
She's
than
a little closer to
voice.
Her actual name of Joy.
She is.
You know,
play the Louis Farrakhan one more time.
God does not love this world. God never sent Jesus to die for this world. Jesus died because he was 2,000 years too soon to bring about the end of the civilization of the Jews.
I do love that. That's right. Preach on.
Yeah.
He never was on no cross. There was no Calvary for that Jesus. Early one Saturday morning, our Savior taught us. When he found out he was 2,000 years too soon to end the civilization of the Jews, he decided that he would give his life for the truth that he taught, that his name would live.
What?
That is some weird
earth?
Stuff.
I can't even.
But wow. Better on helium. Better on helium.
Way better on helium. Mm-hmm.
I like the fact at some point when he goes, when he's 2,000 years too soon, and there's that pause, and there's people in the crowd going, yeah, that's right. Like, do they know where he's going? Because I had no idea where he was going on that. Like, did they actually?
Well, I mean,
like,
I don't think those speeches are for rookies.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think.
Yeah.
I don't think you have, you know, usual people like you, you know, you, me, or, you know, Bill from Ohio that just kind of sitting in there like, I didn't see that coming. I had no idea. It was a thrill ride. The whole speech was a thrill, a roller coaster of emotions.
As someone who attended Yale's Divinity School, did. Like, what is he even saying? He's saying that Jesus showed up. I didn't know. He was 2,000 years too soon to end the civilization of the Jews, which was his real goal. And so he decided instead to kill himself, basically, not on the cross, somewhere else, to say that his name would live on so that eventually we would end the civilization of the Jews.
So I can't speak for the Yale Divinity School because I did not go to the Yale Divinity School.
I thought you did.
No. I intentionally went and took it through history. I wanted to learn the historic part of it, not the Divinity School's smoke and jive on it. I wanted to hear from a professor of history that, of course, had no smoke, no jive.
No, all facts.
But anyway, I think, if I may, I'm having a hard time even figuring out where he might find that in any scripture.
Yeah.
That Jew was, I mean, the scriptures of Bob.
Right.
Bob the apostle on the bench. You know, he was the like, if Peter is sick or one of them is sick, he's like, I don't know, get Bob.
The backup, the alternate.
He's the alternate apostle. Even I think Bob, the alternate apostle, I don't even think you could find anything close to that there.
Yeah, that one's, I can't, because I can't even follow it. Do you,
no,
Pat?
No, I don't. Okay. I'm not sure.
I'm trying to follow. I'm trying to follow even who wants to believe in a God that doesn't love
the world.
The world.
And doesn't that go against even the Quran? I think, don't they believe Allah does love the world? Or maybe not, huh?
I don't know.
Because I don't know any scripture where it says God does not love the world.
In fact,
that's
God
new
so loved
to me,
the world
that he sent
his
only
son.
Begotten son. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
So. That's a minor kink in the hose there.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, it is.
Mm-hmm. But it is. You know what's amazing? Can you imagine? I had people taking full-page ads out in the New York Times saying that I was an anti-Semite, and I had to be stopped. Hey, remember that?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
He still has his Twitter feed. Nobody's even saying
that's
anything
what's
about
incredible.
This. Nobody is
incredible.
Saying anything. Can you imagine if I would have got up and said, you know, Jesus, he failed in his mission. He was sent to wipe out the Jews, and he couldn't do it. So he decided, kill me or I'm going to kill myself. I mean, that's basically what he's saying. Can you imagine saying that?
Yeah.
Any other person saying that?
And it's okay.
And it's okay.
I'm surprised, too. Like, you know, because Twitter has obviously banned a bunch of conservatives. Over the years, they've had, this is the talking point of every conservative every time it happens. At some point, you'd think they'd just be like, all right, just take it off so we don't have to hear that point again.
I mean, it's Alex Jones.
Yeah.
You say Alex Jones is horrible. Okay, I agree with you. I don't think he should be taken off, but you
did.
Has
he ever said anything worse than that? I don't think so.
Well,
I mean,
yeah.
Saying the Jews should be wiped out now.
Yeah, and he's also saying that our government is killing children in schoolhouses. You know, to take away our guns. I mean, I mean,
but he's not calling for the extermination of an entire people.
No,
true.
No,
that's pretty
very
bad.
Good. Very good. Very good. Only been a few that really have done that.
You know their names. So
yeah.
A lot of them.
Yeah.
One of them was not Bob, the alternative apostle.
No, but we do know them usually only by one name. Serial killers get all three names. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Genocidal maniacs get one.
Get one.
Stalin.
Yeah,
Mao.
Right.
Adolf.
Ted.
Ted.
I mean, you get one name. You graduate. I think Louis. I think he's graduated. Farrakhan. Or Louis. Mm-hmm. Well, Louis's not so.
That's not very scary.
No, it's not.
I mean, Farrakhan is just him at this point. I mean, if your last name is Farrakhan, you've got to be considering a change at this point. Because my wife is on the radio, as you guys know, and her name is Lisa Page on the air. And ever since this scandal started happening with the FBI, there's a woman named Lisa Page who's in the middle of this thing texting back and forth about how to ruin the Trump administration from the inside. And I told her at one point, I'm like, there is a scenario here where this story gets so big, you have to abandon your name. Like, this is not, you can't be, if her name was Monica Lewinsky, she would have had to have changed her air name.
Right.
And I think if your last name is Farrakhan at this point, just, you know, you just go to Smith.
You know, you
just
kind of
go
feel
to
bad.
Hey, just pull the trigger.
You know that there were Hitlers around the world that had nothing to do. Might have been so anti-Hitler, and they were like, oh, jeez.
Yeah, like Steve Hitler. He's really
Steve
regretting
Hitler,
it.
He's like, come on.
I love the Jews. They're fantastic.
I know. At least he's, honey. I know you're married into the name, at least, but it could be worse. He could be gassing kids and people. And
wait, what?
Wait, hold it.
Come on.
Jeez, man.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck program.
Peter Schweizer, he is the producer of The Creepy Line, which is a movie everyone needs to see. He is also the author of Secret Empires, which has come out in paperback. And Peter, I didn't think we would have you on the air so quickly, but there is another piece of the story you started telling us last week that has dropped, and we'll get into that. First, welcome to the show. And can you tell us why you say that Joe Biden is the most corrupt vice president in history?
Well, it's always great to be on with you, Glenn. Yeah, I think the evidence is overwhelming. And all you have to do is look at his son's financial transactions and specifically financial accounts that he's tied to. And Glenn, I'd be happy to provide a copy of this for you, and you could share it with your listeners. But all you need to do is look at the financial records from the Morgan Stanley account that involves his son, Hunter Biden. And what it shows is while his father was vice president, his son is cashing in. He's cashing in with our rivals and adversaries, the Chinese government. He's cashing in with other countries that are rife with corruption like Ukraine. He's cashing in with payments from corrupt oligarchs in Kazakhstan, one involving the son of the former prime minister there. And he's cashing in from unknown mysterious sources. This bank account shows a deposit of $1.2 million from this sort of alphabet LLC that nobody can trace, coming out of a small Swiss bank bank called BSI, which has been implicated in money laundering in 10 different countries. And this is all happening, Glenn, while Joe Biden, according to Barack Obama, was vice president, was point person on U.S. policy towards these countries. So it's self-enrichment at the highest level, and it involves, in the case of the Chinese government, actually a political powerful rival to us that I would argue presents a much bigger challenge to our future than Russia does. Russia is a declining power demographically and in terms of its industrial might. Right. China is rising and threatening the United States, and Hunter Biden was cashing in from the Chinese government itself.
Okay, so the reason why one of the guys who was investigated during this Trump thing, the reason why he went to jail is because he was involved in Ukrainian politics, and Ukrainian politics is really dirty. Lots of people on the take, from Russia, and he wasn't claiming any of this money. What's happening now, and do you know John Solomon?
Yes, I do. I know John well. John is a terrific reporter. He was at the Associated Press, the Washington Post. He's now at the Hill. He's terrific, and I talk to him all the time. He's very, very good.
All right. So he, like you said, worked for the Washington Post, the Associated Press. When he went over, he's the executive vice president at the Hill.
Yeah.
For him to publish, because of the Clinton camp, they put the pressure on the Hill to make sure that all of his stories are opinion and not filed as stories. Can you tell me?
It's remarkable. I don't know the full ins and outs, and John is not one that would that would share anything like that with me. But what is very clear is that John does amazing reporting. And on Ukraine, Glenn, what he has shown quite clearly is the prosecutor general in Ukraine during the tenure when Joe Biden was vice president was a guy named Shokin. And Joe Biden bragged after he left the vice presidency that he got Shokin fired.
Do you know anything about Shokin? I'm going to play the audio here in a second.
Yeah.
But I want
you
to set the scene. Who is this guy? What do you know about him? What do you know he was working on?
So Shokin was a prosecutor general, and as in the case in a lot of situation in Ukraine, you don't quite know who is straight and who is on the take. But Shokin was appointed by the reformist government, by Poroshenko, who Biden was friends with. Biden claimed publicly that he didn't like Shokin because Shokin was not investigating and pursuing corruption cases enough. And so he brags about getting him fired. What Joe Biden doesn't say is that Shokin was investigating his son at the time. And this is where it takes an interesting twist, Glenn. So Shokin does get fired because Joe Biden tells Poroshenko, the president of Ukraine, I'm going to withhold $1 billion in loan guarantees unless you fire Shokin. And then his successor gets appointed, a guy named Lushenko, and Joe Biden gives Lushenko his imprint and says, this guy is a solid choice. Here's the problem for Joe Biden. Lutsenko is now saying he wants to reopen the investigation into Joe Biden's son. So the firing.
Now, so this was not Shokin, a. So hang on just a second. Yeah. This was not an investigation into the company that he had ties to. This was an investigation on Joe Biden's son.
Yes, it was on both. It was on both. And here's what's important to know, and I know this is very complicated and there are lots of names. The company in question is called Burisma, and it was this sort of energy company in Ukraine. Well, Burisma was started by, as can only happen in the Ukraine, was started by the Minister for Energy at the time, Zlochevsky. Zlochevsky was aligned with Yanukovych, who's the pro-Russian minister. So get your hands around this. Hunter Biden, the vice president of the United States' son, is being paid millions of dollars by a corrupt energy minister who worked for the pro-Russian leader in Ukraine. It's a remarkable string of relationships. And what Shokin and now Lutsenko want to investigate is, first of all, Burisma, the company, because there's all kinds of allegations of money laundering and corruption. But they, second of all, explicitly back in 2014 and 2015, were investigating Hunter Biden and Burisma. And now the new prosecutor general wants to reopen that case and wants to share that file information with the current U.S. Attorney General William Barr.
Okay.
It's extraordinary.
Manafort went to jail for the same connections with the same people that were locked in with the former Soviets, right?
Right, that's right.
So
he was lobbying illegally for Yanukovych.
Right,
that's correct.
So we know this has happened before. We know that people went to jail. I knew about Manafort, you know, years before he went to jail. We had all of that stuff was out, kind of like this is with Joe Biden's son, but right. Nobody covered it until Manafort went to work for Trump. So we know what that's all about, because that guy should have been in jail long ago.
That's right. And by the way, working with Manafort for Yanukovych and these Yanukovych-related entities were a guy named Tony Podesta, John Podesta's brother, who's a lobbyist, and Greg Craig, who is the former White House counsel in the Obama White House, who is facing charges in New York as well. All three were working for Yanukovych or Yanukovych-linked entities. So, yes, this goes very deep, and it's very widespread. And now you have the vice president's son wrapped up in this. At the time when Joe Biden, he could, you know, elevate his thumb or he could give thumbs down and determine whether the Ukrainian government was going to get, you know, more than $1 billion in aid. It was his call. Barack Obama said that. The European nations said that. He was the point person, and his son was getting rich while his father was doing that.
Okay, let me play the audio of what we have Joe Biden saying at a group of, foreign relations people, and he's bragging about getting this guy fired. Listen.
I'm desperately concerned about the backsliding on the part of Kyiv in terms of corruption. I'll give you one concrete example. But it just happened to be that was the assignment I got. I got all the good ones. So I got Ukraine. And I remember going over convincing our team or others to convincing us that we should be providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv. And I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. We're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting the $1 billion. I said, you're not getting the billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid at the time.
at the time. Okay, interesting. We're going to go back into that here in just a second with Peter Schweizer. He is the author of Secret Empires.
This is the best of the Glenn Beck Program.
John Solomon is with us. He is the executive vice president of The Hill. And I'm confused by this, John, an opinion contributor to the Hill. Your story does not read like an opinion piece.
Yeah, I'm at heart, I'm just a reporter. I think today we call me an investigative columnist, sort of in the tradition of maybe a Jack Anderson. But what my goal is to tell stories to people that are hidden under rocks that matter about the integrity of their government. Call it opinion, call it news, call it what you want, but that's the mission.
But I just want to make sure that people know that you have credibility. You worked as a reporter for The Washington Post. You worked as a reporter for the Associated Press.
Yeah, for 2 decades, absolutely.
Okay, so you're not some schlub who just has a blog and an opinion like me. You actually have earned
this.
You're
very kind. Thank you.
Okay. So John, the story that I heard from Peter Schweizer a couple of weeks ago, have now taken, and I think taken it to a new level, and no one is reporting on it. We kind of know the story, but can you take us through it and give us the meat of this?
Yeah, absolutely. So first off, Peter did some fantastic work during the 2016 election, raising questions about why is Hunter Biden in Ukraine getting money in Ukraine from a natural gas company at the same moment his dad, Joe Biden, the vice president, is the official point man for the Obama administration on the Ukrainian crisis. And if you look at the timing that Peter laid out, Joe Biden gets named to be point man mid-February 2014, and within a few weeks, Hunter Biden suddenly gets this mystery offer to go be a board member of this Ukrainian company. So on the face of it, it looks like the sort of pay-to-play or scratch-my-back politics that we see so often in politics. But here's the big development. By 2016, Ukrainian corruption prosecutors had begun focusing on this company. It's called Burisma. It's a natural gas energy company. And the Ukrainian prosecutors were examining it for multiple reasons. They feared there might have been some tax evasion under Ukrainian law. They believed there might have been some corruption in the securing of drilling permits. And then they were very concerned that money was being exfoliated or taken out of the company and moved to the United States, whether it's money laundering, misuse of money, legitimate. They didn't know. They wanted to get to the point of interviewing the people that were taking the money, and one of those persons was Hunter Biden, an American now working for this natural gas company. And at the moment, the prosecutors were preparing a request to interview Hunter Biden. Joe Biden shows up in Ukraine on one of his Ukraine trips, and he tells the president of the country, if you don't fire the prosecutor, the chief prosecutor of this country, in the next 6 hours while I'm here, I'm going to pull back the $1 billion in loan credits your country needs to stay solvent, and you'll go bankrupt in the next 12 hours if you don't do it. I'm leaving here in 6 hours. Fire that prosecutor.
Okay, hang on. I want to play the audio of him actually saying this and telling this story in his own words. Here it is.
I'm desperately concerned about the backsliding on the part of Kyiv in terms of corruption. They made, I'll give you one concrete example. That was the assignment I got. I got all the good ones. So I got Ukraine. And I remember going over convincing our team, or others, to convincing us that we should be providing for loan guarantees. And I went over, the 12th, 13th time to Kyiv, and I was supposed to announce that there was another $1 billion loan guarantee. And I had gotten a commitment from Poroshenko and from Yatsenyuk that they would take action against the state prosecutor, and they didn't. So they said they were walking out to press conference. We're not going to give you the $1 billion. They said, you have no authority. You're not the president. The president said. I said, call him. I said, I'm telling you, you're not getting $1 billion. I said, you're not getting $1 billion. I'm going to be leaving here. And I think it was, 6 hours? I said, I'm leaving in 6 hours. If the prosecutor's not fired, you're not getting the money. Well, son of a got fired. And they put in place someone who was solid. At the time.
At the time. Notice he says at the time. We'll get into that later.
Yeah. Very interesting.
So this is the prosecutor general that was fired, Viktor Shokin. Can you tell me anything about Viktor Shokin? Is he a dirty guy? Was he not going after corruption?
Well, he thinks he was, but he was an old school prosecutor, and he was facing some criticism in his country that not enough had been done. Now, there had been some major corruption prosecutions and the securing of some victories against money that had been left from the country. But, he wasn't a popular guy in Ukraine when Biden did this. I think the most important part for Americans is our law, our ethics laws say you don't get involved in a U.S. policy matter if your family has a financial interest. It is irrefutable that Hunter Biden had a financial interest in Burisma, and more importantly, in the outcome of the Ukrainian prosecutors. And yet Joe Biden goes in, and there's no way Joe Biden can say he didn't know. There were numerous stories his son had joined the company. There were numerous stories that the very prosecutor that he was seeking to be fired was looking at his son's company before he went and did this. It's irrefutable. I interviewed Shokin. Shokin said, I was just a few days away from requesting an interview with Hunter Biden when this happened. And they had records showing more than $3 million flowed out of this company, Burisma, to the United States into accounts controlled by Hunter Biden and his business partners right at the time that he gets fired. So let's fast forward ahead. The solid guy that replaces him, that's the new prosecutor general, Yuri Lutsenko. I interviewed him, and Yuri Lutsenko said, I only recently learned that the Burisma investigation was shut down because of pressure from Joe Biden, and I'm reopening it because I have some serious concerns about what we might have known and what we might not have been allowed to investigate. And so right now, as the 2020 campaign starts, Ukrainian prosecutors have reopened a portion of that case and are digging in deep. And that this could have some very big consequences, both in Ukraine and in the United States.
All right. So, John, is there when you said the new prosecutor had no idea that this Burisma investigation was shut down, was there anything else that was shut down? Is there any doubt? You've talked to so many people that were involved, and they verify that what Joe Biden said happened. They said it didn't happen overnight. He had been pressuring them for a couple of weeks, I guess.
Right. Actually, a couple months. That's right. 4 months.
Yeah. Okay. Four months. And so they were being pressured. So they all know it. Is there any doubt in their mind over there that what had to happen to not piss Joe Biden or the United States off was end this investigation?
Lutsenko addressed this in the interview, and he said, listen, we were a country on the brink of insolvency at this point, and we were so reliant on U.S. money, we would do whatever it takes to get that next loan guarantee, because otherwise we go insolvent and we can't pay our bills. And he said when the Russian leadership that had previously run the country, the Russian-friendly president, Yanukovych, left the country, there was only $8,000 left in the entire country's coffers to pay bills.
Gosh.
They were the Russians looted the company country on the way out. And so without the U.S. money, they could not survive. And so he said, absolutely, we would bend to the will of Joe Biden. But now we're doing a little bit better. We're looking at this. There's a new president, President Trump, in town. And we don't like the way this was shut down. And they're also talking about other pressure exerted in other investigations. About 10 days ago, I reported that Lutsenko and other prosecutors and law enforcement officials say the U.S. embassy on multiple occasions pressured them to not pursue certain people. And one of the groups they were asked not to pursue, and I had the letter actually from the embassy, was a nonprofit that was run by George Soros or funded by George Soros. Mm. And you can see the letter, basically the embassy saying, back off these guys. So something was going on in Ukraine in the 2016 election where the Ukrainian prosecutors felt that the U.S. was interfering in their sovereign affairs, the ability for them to conduct their own criminal investigations on their own soil.
Isn't it interesting how the left has made such a big deal out of Paul Manafort, which he's a guy, right, before he was ever involved with Donald Trump. I talked about Paul Manafort. He's a guy who should be in jail. He should have been prosecuted before he even joined with Trump. He went to jail because of the same kind of stuff, playing footsie with the Russians and taking money and not claiming it, et cetera, et cetera. It's interesting to me that such a big deal was made out of Manafort, and yet not a word about this. And it's seemingly in the same pool.
Well, it may even go into a deeper pool, and there are some growing signs. Let's take some things that we now know are in the public record, irrefutable things in the public record. There was a recent court ruling in Ukraine in which a Ukrainian court concluded that NABU, the FBI of Ukraine, knowingly and willfully tried to intervene in the 2016 election to benefit Hillary Clinton. That's a court ruling. How did they do that? They leaked documents in the summer of 2016 to American media like the New York Times, laying out the evidence or alleged evidence against Paul Manafort of these monies coming from the Party of Regions in Ukraine. And that led to Manafort being leaving the campaign and then the criminal investigation. What's extraordinary is that we in the interview I did just a couple of days ago with the Ukrainian prosecutors, they say they were under pressure. They won't say specifically who, but they were under pressure from the United States to narrow the focus of what was leaked to the media to just Manafort and to leave out of the records that they gave the media similar payments that were being made to Democratic figures, including Greg Craig, Obama's former White House counsel. He says that on the record for the first time. So you have a foreign country saying, we leaked Manafort, but we protected the Democrats, including Greg Craig. And also in the same interview, the prosecutor divulges for the first time that he has affidavits or sworn statements from two federal law or U.S. Ukrainian law enforcement officials saying, yes, we were trying to interfere in the election to the benefit of Hillary Clinton. So now we may have real proof that a foreign power did knowingly and willfully intervene in the election, but not on behalf of Donald Trump, in behalf of Hillary Clinton.
John, you have been around, like I said at the beginning, decades, AP, Washington Post. You have been around stories that have been earth-shattering. Compare this. What kind of story is this? How big of a story is this? Not how big it will become, because we have no idea what the press will do with it, but how important of a story is this? Can you compare it to anything you've seen in the past?
You know, I don't want to get ahead of our skis because there's still a lot more reporting. But let's just think about what we know at this very moment. These are facts that are irrefutable in the record. Mrs. Clinton and the Democratic Party had a person assigned to the Ukrainian embassy in Washington to receive research on Donald Trump's ties to Russia. That is irrefutable. It's been confirmed. The Ukrainians say they have a court ruling and intercepts tape recordings showing their Ukrainian law enforcement institution, NABU, trying to intervene in the election on behalf of Mrs. Clinton. You have Nellie Orr's testimony to Congress saying at Fusion GPS, when I worked there as the wife of a senior justice official, Bruce Orr, working for the same firm as Christopher Steele and Glenn Simpson, one of our primary sources of information on dirt on Donald Trump in Russia was a Ukrainian. She says that under oath in Congress. Those are three things that we now know. Now let's take forward the fact that we now know irrefutably by Joe Biden's own words, he ordered or pressured the firing of a prosecutor who was looking at his son's company. Just those four things are more than anything that ever came out and was corroborated in the Russia collusion probe. When we see that, we have to at least say there are some very serious questions that have to be asked of the Democrats, of the Ukrainian government. Tomorrow, I'll be reporting that Ukrainian authorities have tried multiple times in the last several months to come to Washington and deliver to the new Attorney General, Bill Barr, evidence of what they believe occurred in the 2016 election and it occurred in Burisma and Biden. But every time they ask for permission, the U.S. Embassy in Kiev has been unwilling to give them a visa to come here. So that's going to advance the question. What is to hide? Why can't we let these Ukrainians come here and talk to our own Justice Department and share the information? There are a lot of questions. I don't want to get ahead of the skis yet, but I think there's enough in the record of evidence to demand more investigation and certainly more answers to questions.
John Solomon, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Glenn.
You bet. Bye-bye. FromTheHill.com.
The best of the Glenn Beck program.
Who's the biggest fraud that is out there? You know, the reason why Donald Trump won, in my opinion, is, well, A, Hillary Clinton was just horrible. Just horrible.
Yes, it has to be the worst major party nominee ever.
Yeah, well, they might be. Well, up until that point. 2020 might be.
It may be worse. Yeah.
Maybe worse. Mm-hmm. But the reason why he won is because he was authentic in his own way. You know, he likes big gold gaudy things. He doesn't mind being seen with big gold gaudy things. And he's like, yeah, I like hot women. I married a few. Look at them. Ah, they're hot. I mean, so he's authentically him, mm-hmm. even in the things that are not real. Does that make sense to you? Yeah, you know, my woman started to look a little saggy, so we put some, lift in her bazoombas. What?
I remember that speech. It was an impactful moment of the campaign.
I mean, but that's an author. while you're saying, hey, plastic surgery, it is authentically him. And I'm not saying that. I'm just using that as an example.
Right. The bottom line is he says what he thinks.
Correct.
At the moment.
Correct. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And that's what I thought was a rebound from Barack Obama. I knew Barack Obama was so slick and so perfect that it would rebound and you'd get somebody like that.
Yeah, the buttoned up guy goes to, I mean, I remember you initially talking about this theory with Chris Christie when he was coming in. Like, mm-hmm. he could kind of just see some guy who's plain spoken and, you know, his shirt's kind of untucked and he's got gravy on his shirt.
Yeah, his buttons are kind of popping out. Yeah. You see a little bit of his fat and you're like, and he's like, yep, I'm fat. And I, oh, jeez, I just had lunch. I got gravy on my shirt. I'm sorry about that. Listen, here's what's going on.
Right. And Trump's not that guy, but he's a different version of that guy.
Different version of that guy, right? Okay, so now I don't think we're at the pendulum yet. I don't think the pendulum is now at 8 years, maybe we'll be at the pendulum where you're going to want somebody who is just really, you know, soft-spoken, a Ben Sasse type or Buttigieg.
Yeah, the Buttigieg thing is happening now, I think, based on that. I watched his CNN town hall, and he's getting this big spike. He's, you know, again, the polls, he's up to, you know, 4 or 5%. He's not a huge factor yet, but he is breaking out of that. I mean, there's a field of 16 right now. We expect at least 4 or 5 more to be in this race in the next few weeks. So he's able to separate himself a little bit from that very lower tier, and he's making some noise, and that is essentially his approach. He comes off completely as the anti-Trump. He's young. He's he's very calm. He talks about all the details of his policies.
He's a gay guy who's like, I like Chick-fil-A, so I go eat Chick-fil-A. I love their sandwiches.
Yeah. Center of the country man would be the first gay president. And again, if you think, well, shouldn't we just elect someone on merit? No. We should elect someone on who has the most intersectionality points. And that's, I think, the most. I think even more than a Kamala Harris, who would be the first black woman who would be, you know, president. There's more intersectionality points for first gay president, I think, at this point. I think if that would be such a big deal, the Democrats want that title. They want to be able to say that they ran someone who was openly gay. And, you know, again, he comes off very well. I mean, he, mm-hmm. at least in his first appearance,
and
came off very well.
Because he's gay. Bulletproof. Bulletproof. Because there'll be a lot of people that won't listen to anything other than, you know what? I want to make that statement that we're not homophobic.
It was similar with Barack Obama. Yes, it really didn't matter how many times he said he wanted to bankrupt this industry or that industry. Mm-hmm. The bottom line was he was going to be the first black president. And that gave him enough votes to make it not even a contest. I think, honestly, even if he was white, he probably beats John McCain relatively easily. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, it wasn't even a contest because there's enough people in the middle who didn't really don't follow these things that closely, who just wanted to make that statement. And it's a good statement, right? I mean, it's nice to think that we don't care about those things in the United States of America. Of course, immediately upon getting into office, he spent 8 years telling us that's all we care about. Mm-hmm. I mean, so it completely backfired on the people who wanted to make a statement,
correct,
a positive statement about race.
So it'll be interesting to see Buttigieg, who is just he's a mayor from
mayor
Indiana.
Of South Bend, Indiana.
I mean, he's a mayor. I think that actually works to his advantage. A soft-spoken, regular guy who's a mayor in South Bend, Indiana, who goes and he's the new president. He's a complete outsider. I think this guy is worth watching, because you look at Elizabeth Warren. She's done, first of all. She's absolutely done. But there's no genuine Elizabeth Warren that you like. right?
No, she's not a genuine communicator in any way.
She's not Hillary Clinton, but she's close.
Very close, if she's not. If yeah. she's not They'd as bad sisters. As Hillary Clinton. Yeah, they're very similar in their delivery and their inability to seem authentic in any way.
Okay, so now let me give you Cory Booker. Cory Booker is so fake and so over the top that he just will not connect. Now, I'm not talking about policies with any of these people. Just are they real? Listen to Cory Booker in a sit-down conversation with Democrats in the audience. He all of a sudden gets up out of his chair and he does this.
This is America. We know our history. This is a time to stand up, to speak up, to rise up. Because when we stand as Americans, when we join together and fight together and work together, no filibuster can stop us. We ushered in civil rights, women's rights, workers' rights. And in this era, if we organize again, we are going to bring a progressive agenda to this country and move it forward for everyone, no matter who's in the Senate.
I mean, that is, and that's the good side of Cory Booker. I think that's better than his normal his normal performance.
Oh, yeah.
But that just does not strike you as authentic.
It's no,
just,
you know what? That is the kiss of death. You start exposing that. That is the kiss of death that we saw with, what's his face?
Howard Dean. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That is the same kind of speech where it's not authentic. Sit down. You want it too much. Sit down.
Exactly. You want it too much is such a great way to put it with Booker. Because, I mean, the Spartacus thing was the same. It was a different
tone,
but it was the same thing. Yes. He just wants it so badly. I'm breaking the rules. This is my Spartacus moment. It's just so cheesy. And you can just tell all he wants in life is to come up with, like, this perfect speech that's going to win all Democrats to his side so he can get this nomination. When people can sense you want it that badly, you usually don't get it.
And I think that's where, you know, Biden was or is authentically Joe Biden.
Yeah, I think there's some authentic candidates in this race for them. I think, you know, we talked about Buttigieg. I think Biden is authentically Biden. And he's similar in that way you're talking about with Chris Christie, where he'll come out and blurt out things that don't make any sense, and he'll say things that are sort of offensive, and he's going to be apologizing a lot through this campaign.
Well, I mean, he's not Louis Farrakhan.
No, he's not. No, I didn't say that. He's not Louis Farrakhan. Yeah. But, I mean, I think Bernie Sanders is authentic.
You know, I do, too.
Again, like, here's another guy who I think does not fit into that very basic politician mold, where he's, you know, look, he's 147 years old. His hair's all over the place. He looks like a crazy professor. I mean, it looks like he's got a flux capacitor somewhere inside of his house he's created because he fell on a toilet in 1955. I mean, like, that's who this guy looks like.
But he is, look, all of a sudden things changed in 1960. You had this handsome, good-looking, well-spoken, Camelot kind of wow, okay, with Kennedy.
Yep.
And that's what everybody's been shooting for. Who's the next Kennedy? Who's the next Robert F. Kennedy? Oh, he's so sexy. Oh, he's so beautiful. Oh, look at him. He's got his shirt off. Blah, 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 blah. And we have been looking for the Kennedy image for so long. We are now looking for the Scuttle image. I mean, when I think of Bernie Sanders, I think of Scuttle. You remember the seagull from, you know, Little Mermaid?
Mm-hmm.
Played by Buddy Hackett. That's who I think. I mean, I've never seen Scuttle and Bernie Sanders in the same room. I'm not saying they're the same people, but that's what we're going for now. We are officially finished with the JFK good looking kind of guy. And I think that is what Beto is going for.
Right.
He's going for this JFK, RFK look. And I don't think he is. If you look that way, I think you have to be deeper. I think you have to have deep, meaningful thoughts. You know, RFK, everybody who is a fan of JFK that I know of, they all say the same thing. But RFK was the real deal.
Yeah, right. They like RFK better.
Everybody likes RFK because he actually earned it. Where JFK was just living on his looks and his daddy's money. RFK deserved it and earned it. And I think because we're looking for somebody so authentic now, I think to win, you're going to have to earn it. And it's not by memorizing rhymes like Cory Booker just did.
Yeah. Look at this theory, though, on the pendulum real quick. So JFK, this perfect guy, he's just this, you know, buttoned up, everything else. Mm-hmm. You skip over Lyndon Johnson because, I mean, he wasn't elected, right? The next president elected is Richard Nixon, right? Like, total opposite, right, of Kennedy.
But he was the guy who lost to Kennedy, too.
And he was the guy that lost to Kennedy, so, I mean, even more starkly indicates that. But he was like, you know, the guy, you think of him sweating, and you think of him, like, then there's, like, this, that you also think of corruption, right? Like, all of, the, with Watergate. Then you go to...
the peanut farmer.
Again, Ford, not counting him. You go to Carter, then, peanut farmer. Then you go from just, but it was complete incompetence. Mm-hmm. Then you go to a guy, competence, right? You have a real competence there. Some people saw that, though, as like family values and everything in that whole generation. Mm-hmm. I mean, George H.W. Bush largely wins because Reagan was so successful, he couldn't lose. Mm-hmm. But then we go to the Bill Clinton guy. He's the saxophone playing guy. Mm-hmm. But then he turns into the scandal guy. We need someone with honor. George W. Bush. George W. Bush comes in. And George W. Bush comes in, and yes, you know, the left never likes him, but
he does the hard things that nobody really likes. Yep. I mean, all the way to TARP, he would frame that as, look, I know this is, he said it.
Yep.
I had to violate it to save it.
The capitalist system. Yeah, right. Then you have, but remember, the other thing about Bush was stumbling over speeches all the time. Mm-hmm. He constantly couldn't get through sentences. Mm-hmm. Then you have the Mr. Perfect buttoned up guy. With Obama, he comes in. That's all he does is he makes great speeches, supposedly. And he's the most buttoned up intellectual guy you've ever seen in your entire life. The exact opposite of the way Bush was portrayed. And then Obama goes for 8 years. And again, if you believe the left, how on earth does Hillary Clinton lose? This is just a handoff because Barack Obama's presidency was so successful. Instead, the pendulum swings the other way. And you have a guy who is swearing on stage, who is, you know, who doesn't always nail every single fact. He's out there, but he gets the people pumped up. You know, the people love him. He's out making huge rallies. A totally different, profile of a candidate. And so, again, you know, Barack Obama won twice, right? So does it go back, you know, in 2024 to a Democrat who has the exact opposite profile of Trump, or does it happen in 2020? I mean, it's an interesting thing because we get sick of what we have and we go for something else.
Yeah, I would say that it would go to 2024. However, if you're just looking at based on, you know, the pendulum, the only thing you couldn't count on is that time has sped up now because everything is so intense. What used to take 4 or 8 years now can take 2 or 4 years. Mm-hmm. And so you just don't know. But one thing I do know is the candidate that runs against Trump will need to be as authentic as he is. And I know people think, oh, he's a fraud. No. He makes no bones about who he is, how he runs his business, what he does. He does not care. And that's what America was attracted to. Somebody who's like, shut up.
The Blaze Radio Network. On demand.